This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
Rafael Dos Anjos and Colby Covington will fight for the interim welterweight title. Is it necessary? We will discuss. Darren Till fishes his wish. He'll fight Stephen Thompson in Liverpool. Is it too much, too soon for the Scouser? Kamaru Usman finally gets matched up against a ranked opponent. Joe Rogan thinks the UFC should get rid of win bonuses, and could Zuffa Boxing get launched with a bang? Thanks to those listening on TSN Radio in Toronto and Ottawa or to the podcast. Please tell your friends, review the show, and subscribe. And of course, if you are listening to the radio, please note that this version that you're listening to is actually a trimmed down version most of the time. If you want to listen to the full version of the show, please do subscribe online. And again, rate the show. We'd appreciate it. Joe, how are you?
Pretty good so far. It's glory time again, yep. Which I'm excited for. We had a little, I don't even know anymore. That's the thing. Glory to me now is just, I get so hyped up when it comes. I can't even think when the last show was, but I think it was beginning of March. We were in Rotterdam, so now we're back. We're going to L.A. We're going to be in Long Beach. We got a lot of good fights on it, so I'm hyped.
Yeah, familiar UFC name on that card.
Yeah, Chris Camozzi, which is going to be exciting. But this time he's got a real tough fight. He's fighting Mike Lemaire, who's very good kickboxer, who's been a great Muay Thai fighter for many years in the North American scene. So his Camozzi's debut wasn't against the toughest opponent, and he kind of walked through it. So we really didn't see how good Chris Camozzi is going to be. So this is the time we're going to find out.
I've got to give props to his brother, Brian Camozzi, who fought in the UFC recently and came out to Inna Camozzi. You know that song?
No.
The Hot Stepper?
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Inna Camozzi.
Okay.
And he came out to that stuff. That was good. I caught that.
You caught that, yeah?
You're a music guy. As long as one person gets the reference, that's all that matters.
So you're a music guy. Yeah. I think last episode, I didn't know who Weiser's was. Was it Weiser?
Weiser.
Well, not even Weiser. See, I don't even know. Yeah. But I did look them up. I do know their songs.
Okay,
I knew a few of their songs, yeah. But I wasn't really into them. So that was my, European Gino days mixed with some hip-hop and Biggie. But yeah, I wasn't listening to
that. You know Inna Camozzi then. You should be familiar with
now
the Hot
I know
Stepper.
That. Yeah, I know the Hot Stepper. That I was more into. So now you're talking a little more.
Yeah, exactly.
My
little Vengabus.
Yeah, that's
it. All that
I loved it.
Yeah.
I was in I loved all the dance clubs. I was glow-sticking. I had the spiked hair. One point, I even had blonde streaks in my hair.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Everybody did. I had that at
you
some point in high school.
Yeah,
I had the highlights, yeah.
And I called it the blowout. So you basically spiked the sides of your hair and the top up, and they all had streaks like a Dragon Ball Z character.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called, the blowout or the flare out.
Jersey Shore. I know what you're talking about. It was the guys from B44 made that popular.
Was
here.
It? I thought I made it popular, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe I did. Maybe
do you remember B44?
I know B44.
Okay,
yeah.
Local guys.
Yeah, they are.
Well, do you know who the Beach Boys are?
I know the Beach Boys.
Okay, so I ordered a record online. I collect records.
Nice.
And I ordered Pet Sounds, their most famous album, an original stereo copy. And I got it in the mail, and it was marked down in price because there was writing on the sleeve.
Okay.
So open up the mail, whatever, I get it. The writing on the sleeve was Brian Wilson and Mike Love's signatures on the back of it.
You tweeted about that, right?
The two most famous Beach Boys. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
still in shock.
There you go.
Well, let's get to the Octagon, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Rafael Dos Anjos and Colby Covington. So it seems like Tyron Woodley is going to be out until July at the very earliest, and the UFC has decided to put forth an interim welterweight title. Now, do you think that this is something that they should be doing?
I don't know. We haven't really seen Colby in a long time, Dos Anjos made his way. Do I think it's necessary? I don't think it's necessary right now. I think both of these guys could maybe fight for maybe a number one contender for when Woodley comes back to make it an interim title.
Isn't that what an interim title is, basically? You get a belt.
It's basically the winner gets to fight Woodley after.
Yeah.
So why do we have to call it an interim?
It juices it up.
You think so?
I like interim titles, and I'll tell you why. The guys get paid more. The agents get paid more. These guys get to add things to their resume that they normally, ordinarily wouldn't. I just think it's a fighter-friendly thing. It's not fan-friendly. Fans seem to think that they are basically a phantom belt and used as a marketing tool, which is probably the case. But to someone who is going to order UFC 224 or is, somebody
it's
says, why should I
marketing.
Order UFC 224? There are two titles on the line rather than one. These Nunes is fighting Pennington. Not to mention that if that fight falls through with Nunes and Pennington hasn't fought in a while, could get injured. Who knows? Nunes could get injured. You had the whole thing with sinusitis back last July. Now you've got a title fight headlining it. You know, it's more of a safety net, if anything else.
Yeah, I can see why they do it, but Are we doing too many of them, I think, is the question, right?
Well, yeah. A lot of people are worried that it's going to water down the divisions. There's going to be too many belts floating around. But at the same time, the belt will get unified.
Yeah.
It's not like somebody's the interim champion. I mean, Henan Burrell was the interim champion for a long time because Dominic Cruz was injured and then eventually became the official champion because Cruz hadn't fought in like two and a half years.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
I look at it like an organization like Glory. We've only had in the history that we've had Glory. I think we've only really had... One or two interim titles.
There's one now, isn't there?
Yeah, two. We had, this is what's going to be happening in LA. We have Robin Van Roosmalen against Kevin Van Oostrand. So this is like, this is the second time, but this is our first unification. We've never had a unification with Glory. We have an interim champion in the light heavyweight division, but they've never gotten to fight for it. So this is our first unification. So I don't know. I mean, you make a good point about it being able to sell, the marketing. I mean, what's it really cost the UFC? The cost of the belt?
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, and higher salaries.
Yeah.
You know, they have to pay a little bit more. And also, these guys will enter into championship contracts. Whoever wins will enter a championship contract, so they'll get paid more.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, it's good for, that's why I think it's good for the fighters. But at the same time, if you're the UFC, let's say you call Rafael Dos Anjos, because I think he represents himself now, and you say, we want you to fight Colby Covington in Brazil. And he says, no, I'm not doing it.
Because I'm
next in line for Tyron. And I'm not doing it unless there's a belt on the line. And the UFC calls Colby Covington and says, we want you to fight Rafael Dos Anjos. And he'll be like, well, you know, I was hoping to get a title shot next. He's probably more inclined to fight Rafael Dos Anjos because he knows he'll get the next title shot with a win. But if Dos Anjos won't agree to do it without an interim fight on the line, you put an interim title on the line. Colby versus Tyron, to me, has more juice. I think that's a juicier fight because of all the trash talk
outside
Covington's
marketing.
Yeah. Not to mention that you've got Colby Covington going back to Brazil where he trashed all the fans.
He'll
be the biggest heel in the world that night in Brazil.
For sure.
They'll be booing him. He'll have elevated security. It's like with Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva.
He'll need a new, different hotel.
Yeah.
He'll need special rides. Yeah, he'll need full security.
Exactly. But that kind of thing, and if he goes into press tours and starts ripping Brazil, it builds hype. You're building a heel.
Yeah.
So, for the UFC, it's a risk versus reward, and I think that this is a risk you take by giving these guys a little bit more money and putting a belt on the line, and you might water down the division a little bit. But at the end of the day, you're building two good fights out of instead of one good fight because, and potentially a good, you know, if you build Colby Covington's profile, he continues to be this heel. He manages to beat Rafael Dos Anjos in Brazil, even if he lays on him for five rounds.
Yeah. Which is what Tyron's looking
him.
For, right? I guess even from Woodley's perspective, he's looking for the bigger fights, right? I guess it sounds bigger, and it will be a bigger fight
if
it's a unification belt.
Yeah, and if Dos Anjos beats Covington in the same manner that he beat Robbie Lawler, now you've got a guy who has another big notch on his belt and builds his profile going into a fight with Woodley. So Woodley will get a guy that has a bit of a juiced resume as a result of
this.
And
when was Woodley's last fight? Do you know?
Woodley's last fight was, I think his last fight was last July against Demian Maia, and that's where he got injured.
So it almost be a year. I don't mind that. I think
it could be more than a year, right? If July is the earliest he can return.
I like that at least they have something in line. I know Glory gives us a year. Like, I mean, my biggest reference is Glory. But they give us a year to defend that title. If not, you have to make a decision. So even our light heavyweight champion broke his hand. That's why they gave the unification bout. Mm-hmm.
That's how you got your title shot, right? Like Nicky.
Yeah, he was out. He had shoulder.
Yeah.
But at that point, there was a big misunderstanding. When Glory first started, there was champions and then there was tournament champions. So just because you won the tournament didn't necessarily make you the world champion. It made you the tournament champion. So we really didn't have a world champion. So that's when it was supposed to be me and Nicky were fighting for it and going through that. Then he got injured, so things have to go on, right?
And that would have been a rematch
for me. Like when I was recovering from my concussions, I had about a year to decide. At a year, then they started forcing me, like, what are we doing? And that's when I had to make that decision. So they gave me a full year to try to do it.
So that would have been a rematch with Nicky then?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which I obviously wanted.
Which would have been a 5-round fight versus the first one was 3 rounds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was in a tournament format,
right? Yeah.
Right. I had to fight before 20 minutes before that.
Yeah. Who did you beat?
Raymond Daniels.
Raymond Daniels. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And who?
So
did he
in
beat?
One night in Japan, I got one of the knockouts of the year and a fight of the year in one night.
And who did Holskin beat?
He had a left hook over Karapet Karapetian.
Oh yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember him.
So then
he's not. Is he still with Glory?
No, he's been out for a while.
I remember him. He had a big record, if I remember.
Yeah, he was good. A lot of experience. Yeah. But, I mean, I don't like tournaments. And I think the direction of Glory is going to be getting away from tournaments. I did a big pitch on getting rid of them because I don't think they're the greatest fighter comes out of them. So we'll see.
Hopefully, and also for safety reasons, I imagine.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you don't want to go in a first fight. You get hit. You get rocked a little bit. You go in the back a little bit. You cool down. Then, hey, you're going to go fight in 20, 30 minutes later again. Your brain is already shook. Do you really want to get hit again? Yeah. Maybe you got knocked down in the first fight. So I'm not for them. Mm-hmm. So I
especially
think
in the
that
heavier
is the
weight
direction.
Classes.
Old school, yeah, we didn't know about it. It was cool in Japan when we saw these big heavyweights, but we didn't know better. Now we know better, so let's try to protect people.
I don't mind tournaments if they're spread out over nights.
Absolutely,
right? Like if it's like you fight this guy this month, and then in 2 months you're fighting this guy, and that's
and
the
it's
finals.
Perfect. Yeah. I think hopefully that's what they want to do. But the problem with kickboxing, it has a long history in tournaments, and people still, you know, the hardcore kickboxing fans still like the tournament factor. My idea is, you shouldn't have to win a tournament to get a title shot. So if you want to do each weight class has a tournament for some money, hey, that's pretty good. That's how we used to do it when I fought. So Glory 11 had the heavyweights. The winner of the heavyweight tournament got $250,000.
Not bad.
My tournament, they ended up having us. The winner would have only got $100,000, but still good money. You know, guys would want to fight for that over a world title, especially if you're not ranked at the top. So that's my opinion. But
all right, cool.
Back to the UFC.
Yeah, back to the UFC. So Dos Anjos versus Covington, that's an interesting fight because you got a striking-based fighter in Dos Anjos who's also a very good wrestler against an NCAA, All-American-level wrestler in Covington who's, I don't think his striking will be on the level with Dos Anjos, but if he can implement his wrestling, it could be a long night for Rafael.
Yeah, who are you leaning towards?
You know, I would lean Dos Anjos a little bit, but I think Colby, if it becomes a grimy grappling fight, like, Colby can win that fight. And I think Colby knows that he doesn't really want to stand with Dos Anjos for that long. But, Colby's striking isn't that bad. A lot of people say he's a bad striker. I don't agree. I think that he's actually a pretty good striker. He just doesn't have a ton of power. He's not a guy that's really
a
big knockout threat.
For me, it's his defense. Like, you can come forward, he can wrestle, but he gets hit a little bit,
you know? But I think a lot of people say that about him as well, but I think that was more because of who, you're thinking probably back to the Maia fight where he got hit a lot.
He got cracked a lot.
I think he was willing to get
distance.
Hit a lot. I think he was willing to get hit a lot in that fight because he knew that Maia didn't have a ton of power.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
You change your game plan.
Well,
fight
I mean,
to fight.
It's very subtle things. Like, I mean, it's not being so different. It's like, man, get your head off center line a little bit, kind of move your head, roll a little bit. It's just little adjustments could be good for him, You don't want to get hit from Dos Anjos. Damian Maia, has power, but not like RDA.
Yeah, it's a weird contrast because going from fighting Robbie Lawler, who had, I don't know if he's ever attempted a takedown, to fighting a Colby Covington, isn't it? For Dos Anjos, that's you're comparing apples to oranges here.
It can definitely slow him down.
Yeah, so
RDA could easily be slowed down if
because
he's scared of
because
the respect
in Brazil,
the wrestling.
Because it's in Brazil and because I think that Dos Anjos is the more well-rounded fighter, I'd probably lean in his direction, but if Colby Covington, I think Colby Covington might be a 2-1 underdog in this fight, and if he is, he'll be worth a look.
Yeah. No, I see it. I wasn't overly impressed with his Maia, just based on his like I said, getting in, getting hit, but he does have potential. I mean, I still think, his words have really built him up, but his record shows it. I don't know. I have to definitely, I give RDA a big advantage in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think a lot of people will, but I also think it's just, you have to look at the matchups. I think that, again, I think Dos Anjos is probably the more well-rounded fighter, but with Covington, his wrestling is so high level that you can never write off someone like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You just never know.
I still believe, and you ask anyone, I think wrestling is probably the most important part in MMA. So I think if you have a solid wrestling base, you have the ability to dictate where you want the fight to go. A striker's got to stay away. The jiu-jitsu guy's on the ground. So these wrestlers, good, solid wrestlers can dictate the pace. And I think Colby's that guy. But like you said, RDA is good in every aspect, I think, except the wrestling, where his jiu-jitsu's good and his striking is good, where Colby has that in-between transition phase. So it is interesting, but I think RDA is all day.
Yeah, for me, I think that if you're betting on this fight, let's say you're interested in betting on this fight, you're better off saying, I think Dos Anjos is going to win inside the distance or Covington's going to win by decision.
This is your picks.
You just do one of each, and you almost hedge it.
Yeah, this is what you were telling me last time about how you're starting to pick more outside of the actual winner losing of the fights or
Yeah, look at
more
outcomes.
More of like, yeah,
likely
outcomes.
Yeah,
prop bets.
Yeah, and those work well. They're also good if you stack them. Like if you say like, oh, I think this person's going to win by decision and this person's going to win by knockout, and you stack it.
And then you stack it.
Yeah. Yeah. But whatever. That's the story for another day. But Dos Anjos, I think, is what we've seen from him at welterweight's been absurd. The way he ran through Magny, a Magny who just beat Carlos Condit, who you can't say is off his game. How he just beat Robbie Lawler. I know Lawler got injured in that fight, but Dos Anjos implemented a risky game plan and destroyed Lawler, which was interesting to see.
Yeah, Dos Anjos is just a beast, man. I don't know. Like, every time I've always bet against him, like, I thought Neil Magny would have given him a tough time. Boom, there you go. He gets it. But, like, I'm just looking at his resume here. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, he's been around forever, too.
And if you look at his last, you know, every time he fights, it's either a performance of the night or fight of the night. Like, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very impressive.
Yeah,
so.
And Covington's, I think, what, 11-1? So he's got a pretty good record as well. Only loss was to Warley Alves. He got choked out in that fight. But otherwise, he's had a pretty clean record. Darren Till, he fishes his wish. He kept saying he wanted to fight Stephen Thompson. We kept hearing Stephen Thompson was injured. His father was coming out and saying he's not going to be ready to fight.
It was
Liverpool.
His hand, right?
Yeah. But now it looks like, I don't know if they were incentivized to take the fight, but the fight's made. Darren Till versus Stephen Thompson reportedly happening in Liverpool. I think it's a great fight. There's one thing that I'm a little tentative about.
Okay.
Is when you take a guy like Darren Till and you put him in Liverpool, I think you have to give him a fight that he's almost certainly going to win.
Yeah.
Against Stephen Thompson, a 5-round fight, like that's a tough test. Stephen Thompson also isn't going to be a guy that, you know, the people in Liverpool hate because he's such a nice guy. Like, he's going to come out and do media and be very respectful. And that's why I thought that Covington versus Till would have been a good fight.
I think so.
But I think Covington Dos Anjos makes a lot of sense. But if you would have put Covington against Till and had Covington be the heel in Liverpool, it would have been, the building would have erupted with boos for him. And it would have really built that kind of profile. But I think for Covington, if you're Covington and you're offered one of those two fights, you take the Dos Anjos fight for sure. But Till versus Thompson, that's a tough fight for Darren Till. Because if you look back at Darren Till's previous fights, he had that great win over Cerrone, but the rest of his fights have been close fights. Like, he's been in, he had a draw with, I believe it was Nicholas Dalby. But again, that was a younger Darren Till. He's evolved. This is a good stylistic matchup for Till. He's not going to have to worry about takedowns. He can use his power. He can implement his striking game plan against Thompson. But Thompson is not an easy out. Like, no. I mean, I know he's lost. He lost the last fight to Woodley, and then had to draw the previous fight. But you're talking about the very top of the division.
Yeah, and I mean, do we really know enough about Darren Till against the top? No, we don't, right? So how is he going to perform? But I don't like the matchup with Thompson, just because Thompson is a fighter that is unorthodox most of what people are used to. You know, the way the karate stance, the side bounce, it could really make a boring fight for Till. And it might shut down his striking that Darren, you know, that we want to see a little bit more from Darren Till. I just think anytime you fight Wonder Boy, it's going to be a harder matchup. The fight's going to be a little bit slower paced. You're going to have to try to figure him out. It's a little bit more awkward. So I just don't think it's a great fight to really showcase Darren Till.
Yeah.
So you're going to get either a really exciting fight or a really boring fight.
It will be. If he watches your video, it'll be an exciting fight.
If you watch it, yeah, you should. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's it. The video hopefully gets more views now.
I'll have to send it to him.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe he'll retweet it.
Yeah.
Like, I watched this, and now Stephen Thompson's
done. He seems like a very intelligent guy when it comes to his striking, and I know he's really into it. I think he even has tutorials out, right?
Who, Darren Till?
Yeah. In Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's really smart, but I think he got here with his mouth. So now he just has to show it, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is a massive test. This will make him the number one contender outside of course, whoever wins this interim title
fight.
And
he's currently ranked 7th with the UFC. Yeah.
Stephen Thompson's ranked number one.
Yeah.
So you win that fight. Now you're probably going to vault all the way to number one or two. Probably would be ranked below Dos Anjos. That fight's happening first. Dos Anjos versus Covington's happening first. So we'll see what happens there. And then the loser of that fight, be it Dos Anjos or Covington, would be ranked below Darren Till if he got the win here. So we'll have to see.
What I like is Darren Till, from what I remember, southpaw, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. So I think that's where, And Wonder Boy likes to stand southpaw.
I think that
opinion.
Was a big talking point with Cerrone. Is the Cerrone in trouble with southpaw?
Yeah. So I think if it's a southpaw versus southpaw matchup, I like it. I think Wonder Boy really does well when he's the southpaw and he has an orthodox fighter in front of him because he's used to that distance. But a lot of southpaws have trouble with southpaws because, again, most people are orthodox style fighters. So when a southpaw gets a southpaw fighter, it kind of changes things for them and it makes it a little bit more awkward. So I usually now, if I have a southpaw in front of me, if you have the ability to go southpaw, I recommend fighting, you know, southpaw.
And Thompson might do that. Thompson could switch between
southpaw
and orthodox.
Yeah, if Thompson knows how
to
switch, but I want to say Thompson usually comes out as a southpaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, because karate fighters like to put their power leg in the front, mm-hmm. right? Where kickboxers and Muay Thai fighters, we like to put our power leg behind. So orthodox fighters, the power leg's behind on the right. So southpaws with a karate fighter like that front side kick, the front kick. So they like that power side in front. So my understanding is Wonder Boy is a southpaw. So and Till is a southpaw. So it could make things interesting, but really exciting or really boring, in my opinion.
Well, I learned in class that a front roundhouse kick is more effective than a rear roundhouse kick because you can't see it coming. Is that fiction?
Faster, yeah, it's faster.
Okay,
but the other if it's behind,
I'm thinking
power.
It's more for practical use.
Yeah, depends what you do. Do you want to like keep them away or do you want to knock them out?
Yeah,
yeah. Right. So if you want the most power, you got to put that power side behind you.
Yeah,
you keep it in front. But again, a lot of these karate guys are so good at developing power from that short distance.
You buckle a leg too.
Yeah, it's really good. And the way it's karate uses snap. So like they use a lot of extension, like they'll get and they really figure on like snapping the kick or like it's more like a flutter kick where that solid kickboxing is more like a bat swinging rather than a flick. So you can get power from different ways. I can go technical on this for hours.
Well, the good thing about both these guys is that this is the type of fight that I'm sure they both want. I'm sure that Thompson isn't looking for a guy who's going to want to take him down, and I'm sure that Till isn't looking for a guy that wants to take him down.
Yeah.
Because Till wants to use his striking power, whereas Thompson wants to use his technique.
Yeah.
So that's
I think it's interesting,
part.
And I think it's going to be one of these fights that I think people are going to call boring, but if you're a technician and you start understanding what goes on, it could be a really interesting fight for you. I still think people give Wonder Boy way too much respect. And that's what the video is. They try to wait too long with them. You're waiting because you're scared to get countered. And you got to pressure. Get in with your defense, pressure them, and finish. Like, to me, it's an easy style to beat. But a lot of guys give way too much credit. It's a fight. You're going to get hit a little bit. If you have to take a shot to get inside and do some damage and work. So I think Darren Till has that stubborn mentality where he's got to go forward and he knows it. So, we'll
sure.
see.
Well, last week was welterweight week because we had those two fight announcements followed by Kamaru Usman finally getting a ranked opponent. You know, he always says that people are ducking him.
Yeah.
Now, you know, he might have bitten off more than he can chew here. I don't know about that because I think Usman is one of the best guys in the division, but he's fighting Santiago Ponz Zanibio, who's on a 6-fight win streak in Chile, which is a neighboring country to Argentina where Ponz Zanibio is from. So he's going to go into hostile waters against a guy with perhaps the best power in the entire division.
Well, Kamaru Usman.
Sort of maybe Woodley.
Yeah, Usman didn't look great in his last fight, right? I think the criticism was he dominated, but he didn't have that finish ability where he could have went and gave a little bit more on the ground and pound to get the finish. But he dominates.
Yeah.
He dominates.
The problem here for Usman, I think, is that this is going to be a 5-round fight. I think the wrestlers, and I had a talk with someone on Twitter about this last week because I said that it would have been more beneficial for Colby if it was a 3-round fight. And he said, no, you know, if the wrestlers have the stamina, they can go 5 rounds. Like, while I agree with that, that is true, you also have to, you know, wrestlers will still run out of, like, their takedowns will get weaker and weaker as the fight goes on, for the most part.
Yeah.
You don't want to make that into a blanket statement. But I think that in 5 rounds, Ponz Zanibio has far more of a chance of catching Usman than in a 3-round fight. Because in a 3-round fight, you know, Usman wins the first 2 rounds, and then he can just play it safe
and
in the third
it,
round.
Yeah.
And wrestlers can do that in 3-round fights. Whereas in 5-round fights, you know, now if you win 4 rounds, you can do that. Or 3 rounds, you might be able to do that. 3 definitive rounds. But, you know, you also don't really want to play it safe for 2 rounds because you got to be careful at all times against these good strikers.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely a good fight. I see Usman using the takedown because you got to, you know, stop that power of Ponz Zanibio.
But how long can he do that for, right? Because if he stands with, I mean, Usman didn't stand with Emil Mech. And I think that Ponzinibbio is a far more dangerous guy on the feet than Emil Mech.
But even if it's like clinching, like you got to get him, push him against the cage, hand fight. You just got to tire him out and stay close to him. And I think Usman's just really good at that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And Usman's got stamina for days.
He's going to just pin you against the cage. And like you got to learn cage fighting. If you're a power puncher and you know, and I don't know, like we saw it with Jimmy Manoa. Like, when you only have one weapon, it's kind of hard, right? If you rely just on your power, sometimes just not enough. So, do we know enough about Ponzinibbio? Have we seen him on the ground?
Yeah, Ponzinibbio is pretty well-rounded. I think he's a BJJ black belt. Like, I think he has skills on the ground, but usually he hasn't needed to use them.
Yeah,
he's so good on the feet.
Usually good with his power, right? So, we'll have to find out. I think this is definitely going to be a fight that's going to test that type of close-range fighting.
Yeah.
Well, if Usman's smart anyways.
Usman's MMA wrestling is one of the top in the UFC.
But you got to think, even with Usman, though, he's been training with good strikers with Henry Hoof now. And so, you know, Hard Knocks 365. So that's got to be an advantage for him. He's got a bunch of power punchers that he's been training with that are huge, too. Like, I've seen videos of him training with Luke Rockhold.
Yeah.
And so he spars with big boys and on a regular that have a lot of power. So he's used to that tough, grinding kind of fight.
Yeah, and I think that's the underrated part of Usman's game. His striking is quite good. And, I mean, he stood with Warley Alves, who's probably his best weapon is on the feet, and he was able to knock him out. So, you know, that's why I think this fight is going to be very interesting. Again, you're giving guys on their home turf tough opponents. You've got Ponzinibbio in Chile getting Usman, and then you've got Till in Liverpool getting Thompson. So interesting booking by the UFC, but I think that's the kind of booking you want to make to build stars.
Yeah.
Because win or lose, I mean, you're building someone's profile. Till, I think they're gambling on, because if Till ends up beating Thompson, he's in line for a title shot, or at least close. Now you've got a new young budding star who's good at talking, who's a fun fighter, who says he wants to win championships in three divisions. You know, he's got his eyes on the prize, right? And those are the kind of guys. That's why, and I, you know, we were going to talk about this, and may as well just get to it now. Dave Meltzer wrote a column about the UFC lacking star power. He basically said that all they have right now is McGregor. That's potentially active in the UFC. Rousey's gone. Lesnar's on the outside right now. He needs to get reinstated by USADA and stay out a couple months. Jones, as we know, his battles with USADA right now are still in the mix and still in progress. So, you know, Darren Till could be the next guy, but the problem with trying to build stars in the UFC is, you know, we're not talking about pro wrestling here, where you can turn a guy heel and have him play to the crowd and have him beat whoever you want them to beat. These are real fights.
Yeah.
Like, you can't, and I think Conor losing to Nate Diaz made him a bigger star because of how gracefully he lost and how he handled it, and then that rematch became so huge. And that's just such a rare thing where a guy can come off a loss and become even bigger.
Yeah.
But you need to get to that level first. Like, Darren Till needs to get to the championship level and lose a fight and come back in that fashion in order to get that kind of heat behind him.
Oh, yeah, it's still very, very soon. But he does have the potential. And, I mean, it all starts with, I mean, being huge in your own country, right? I mean, that's what we saw with Conor in Ireland. And we see that where, you know, once you build that, and I think that the UK are just passionate fans when it comes to fighting. And they'll really push him, but he's got to put in a lot more reps before we call him a star like that. So,
oh, for sure.
I don't know. It's still a lot. Like, I mean, who is the stars, though? I mean, it is kind of a good point. I mean, we got to keep building, but
yeah,
how?
I mean, they have a lot of stars, but they don't have a lot of marketable superstars.
Can we build that? Can we create that? Or is it, you know, is it innate? Is it something that's innate?
I think it's innate, and I don't think it's manufactured. I think, you know, first off, these people need to win fights. You can't become, has there been any superstars in UFC history that don't get to the top level? There just haven't been.
Yeah.
I mean, name all of them. And name everybody who's been a marketable star in the sport. They've all been champions.
They've all been winners, yeah.
So you need to win. That's problem A.
Which a lot of fighters don't focus on enough, to be honest.
Like people said they put Conor in a position to win. Sure, they did, but Conor delivered, and Conor ended up fighting Chad Mendez on short notice. Everybody said he couldn't beat a wrestler.
Well, Conor was even calling the rounds and the method, and everyone was like, oh, this is baloney. Then all of a sudden he did it. So then,
It's just he was able to make people feel a certain way about him. It's something you can't really teach. And I think that Ronda, when she lost, all of those good feelings that people had about her and every asset that she had that made her what she was got thrown out the window by how she reacted to that loss.
Yeah. But she was popular. Like you said, she was winning because of her arm bar. She was taking everybody's arms, right? So every time she fought, that excitement, the hype around her. But again, Dana White also did a lot of extra promotion for her and really pushed her forward.
Yeah. But the thing is, again, I think, like, so here were the assets that made her popular. Good looks, ability to finish people in the first round and sometimes in the first seconds of a fight.
Yep.
I mean, that's always the Mike Tyson effect. If you do that over and over again, you're going to get noticed.
Yep.
Being an Olympian, so there's, you know, a patriotism angle to it. And, you know, her ability to do good interviews. She was able to, she wasn't a fantastic interview, no, but she was able to throw, you know, insult people and
trash
and
there,
promote,
and
yeah,
there.
Throw trash out there, you know, trash talk, promote fights. So with that loss, and the way she reacted to it, where she didn't do any interviews and she went radio silent and she wanted to do things her way, you lose A, the unstoppability because she's been stopped. You lose the Olympian approach where people are like, okay, it's, you know, this is the sportsman element. You need to be a sportsman, or in her case, sports person, whatever. I don't know. I don't need to gender sportsman. A sportsman is any, you know, someone who plays sports.
Exactly.
And sportsmanship is a big part of that. So that went away. Her ability to trash talk, not doing interviews, gone.
Yeah, she can't.
So everything she had going in her favor was offset by how she reacted to that loss.
Yeah, I agree.
And you can't fault her. I mean, she's going to react how she's going to react. But all of that's like all of that capital that you've built is gone. Had she come out after the loss to Holly Holm and been like, "This is only going to make me a better mixed martial
artist,"
we
all still would have followed.
We would have been rooting for her. That rematch would have been huge. But instead, she went radio silent. The UFC wanted to, like, Holm said, "I want to fight. I want to defend my belt. I want to defend my belt." They said, "Okay." They gave her Tate. She loses to Tate. If she would have beaten Tate and then had the rematch with Ronda,
and then it would have been big.
It would have been massive. Yeah. But she loses to Tate. Tate loses. Like, now you can have Ronda and Tate. And that's still a good fight. That's still marketable.
Yep.
She loses to Nunes. And now you've got someone who English isn't her first language, ends up fighting Rousey, destroys Rousey. If you watch that fight, Amanda Nunes did everything that you would have thought you had to do in order to become a superstar in that spot. She had beaten Tate at UFC 200. It was over a million buys.
Yep.
She goes into this fight, 207, destroys Rousey within the first minute or so of the fight, gets on the mic and said, "Ronda Rousey's dead. She's done." She cut the perfect heel promo.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what happened. That people just didn't buy into
didn't
it,
buy
I guess.
It. I guess she didn't have that full package, right?
So. Yeah. Again, she did everything that you would have had to do to get a fan base.
Yeah.
And you just can't make people feel a way that they don't feel.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's tough. And I mean, you try. Like, I mean, guys like Colby Covington are trying to build out outside of the sport with all different ways. And I mean, a lot of even my fighters, they're like, "Oh, what about social media? What about this? What about that?" I said, doesn't matter. You need to win. It doesn't matter. Your social media will grow when you win. If you lose or you're not fighting, you have to fight to build the following. And when you fight, you got to be entertaining. This is what you need to do. So fighters need to put that, you know, that way of outside thinking into the sport. Be a little bit more exciting in the ring. Flash a little bit if you need to. Take a little bit more risks if you need to.
And people say, "Oh, I don't buy into Covington as a heel." Well, look at where Covington was a year ago to where he is now.
I never even heard of him.
Nobody, a lot
when
of people hadn't.
When you went to me that, like, "Hey, we're doing an interview." And
yeah,
I was like,
one
"Who?
Of our first shows. I think it might have been our first show.
Yeah, I'm like, who's Colby Covington? I had to look. I started following him. At that point, I think I had more, you know, Instagram followers than he had. And I was just like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then just watching. And then he
one
just,
year.
That's it.
That's all it took. And he went the other way.
Yeah.
He went the heel approach. And that works, too.
Which it works, yeah. You need some. You need the
day
heel.
The day that the Star Wars movie was released, he tweeted out a spoiler and pinned it at the top of his thing.
Yeah, just.
So here's my story about that. So, I wanted to watch the Star Wars movie with my son. And I found somebody else tweeted, "I can't believe that Colby Covington spoiled the Star Wars movie." I follow each other. I went and muted Colby, so I wouldn't see it. So nobody retweeted it, and I wouldn't see it. And I didn't know what happened in the Star Wars movie. Nobody spoiled it for me. This weekend, going to go watch the movie. My son needs to take a nap. The younger son, 2 years old, so I go and take him out in the stroller for a long walk. I walked with him for 2 hours in the stroller with the dog. And my wife said, "Okay, you know, we're going to watch." My son did something good at school, so he got a chance to watch the movie for the first time. So they go and watch the movie for the first time. I'm walking the dog. I get home, open the door. My son goes, "Guess what happened? Blah, blah, blah."
Boom.
Spoiled the whole movie.
Yeah, so after all of that.
So after all that, I had avoided it. I told him I was going to watch the movie with him.
Yeah, boom. He spoiled it.
Yeah.
So.
Spoiled it. And then my wife, to her credit, tried to play it cool. Like, he fell
he
for
didn't
it.
Do it. Yeah, yeah.
But I knew. I knew by the way that she reacted
initially.
He was
way too excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, well, it is what it is.
That's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
So you're not mad at Colby, so it's okay, at least.
I'm more mad at my
son.
Now. Yeah. I muted him on Twitter.
That's it.
Yeah.
You got in trouble, too.
Yeah, but Colby, that's a good heel move.
Yeah,
if you want to build a heel, spoil and piss people off.
There you go.
You spoil Star Wars.
We'll try it.
That'll earn you enemies.
That's funny.
I like what Colby's doing. I mean, a lot of the xenophobia, you know, I could do without of him ripping Brazil and all that. But
his
reasoning for why he hates Brazil makes sense. You know, people are throwing garbage at him and calling him names
and
throwing slurs at him.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
But did you get to see, let's talk about what we're talking about that. Did you see, you put it on your Twitter, the unsportsmanlike of that celebration? Oh. It's disturbing.
Well, you know what? I will say this.
Should we explain what happened kind of
thing? Yeah, okay. So it was at LFA. Yeah. I guess it was a prelim fight. Guy knocks the guy out, knocks him flat.
Which was a weird knockout because he fell.
Well, the guy
hurt him. Fell on his knee, basically.
Well, yeah, the guy fell on his own knee and knocked himself out, pretty much. And then, whatever, grounded pound. He was face down. The guy uses the guy's back as a springboard to do a front flip. And he stuck the landing, to his credit, almost. But, that's the epitome of being a bad sportsman.
Disrespectful.
And
I'm surprised that didn't cause the corners to jump in.
If it was your guy,
I'd probably jump in. I'm probably jumping over the cage.
That's where it becomes a nightclub.
Doing the flying sidekick.
That's where it's a nightclub and someone's just decked your boy.
I'm doing that double sidekick flying in there. But that's definitely grounds for that. And I'm sure
on
a lot of other teams, it would have caused a lot of fights.
He was DQ'd, 9 months suspension. But I will say this. MMA Fighting interviewed the guy afterwards. And he was so apologetic and said, that's not who I am. I'm a martial artist. I was caught up in the moment. I flip after all my wins, all my amateur wins. This was his first professional fight. All my amateur wins afterwards, I flip. And I just wanted to flip. And it wasn't like doing it on the guy's back was certainly unacceptable. He took full accountability for it. Said, I know that this is going to follow me for the rest of my life. My mom's going to see this
and be mad.
Like, basically, he said everything that you'd want to hear from somebody who's apologizing. Yeah. Took full accountability. So, I mean, not good on him for doing that, but good on him for
owning
how
up.
He owned it. And that's what you got to do. You do something like that, you own it. Because from now on, he is going to be that guy. He's the guy that jumped off someone's back after a win. He might never get to the UFC as a result.
Yeah,
he could go 20-0 as in, but because that stigma is going to follow him.
Or it might do the opposite. You know, he was an unknown guy, and now look how many people know who he is. We're talking about him.
Yeah,
you
know, I don't know his name, but...
Well, the guy who...
He's the springboard guy.
The springboard guy from LFA, but... I mean, he's getting attention from it. You know, who knows? Maybe that actually builds his profile and people start, looking into him. Even all that trash, love it or hate it, people are still watching it.
Yeah, and you're right. Fights have started for worse reasons than that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm surprised. That's grounds for fight right away.
Yeah, if that's
grounds.
If that's your fighter from TKO, you're getting in there.
That's you have to.
I'm a
Scarborough born kid. What am I going to do?
Exactly.
I got street cred here. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
But
that's, he got DQ'd. He's suspended for 9 months and might end up being more. Who knows? But whatever they throw at him, he's earned it. And
but like you said, at least he owned up to
it.
He's culpable. But still. We'll stop it there.
we'll stop it there. I mean, but there's not much more to say about that, but that's not a good look.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua reportedly, the reports came out that the UFC were looking to sign him, and people, I think, misinterpreted that as him fighting in the UFC.
In the UFC, no.
What it actually is they're throwing big money at him to be kind of the first star of Zuffa Boxing.
Yeah.
And I think that if they're going to launch a product and you have Anthony Joshua in your stable, you're off to a good start.
Yeah. Now, when I know the UFC Fight Pass put on that Roy Jones Jr. fight, was that under the Zuffa boxing promotion?
No, that was actually Roy Jones Jr.'s promotion. It's a mix of, it's a hybrid of mixed martial arts and boxing. Not that the sport is, but you have some MMA fights, some boxing.
And the
fights.
UFC just jumped on to put on their platform.
Yeah, it was going to be Roy Jones Jr.'s last fight. They negotiated it, and now they've gotten the rights. They had the rights to it. Speaking of Fight Pass, actually, Endeavor just bought New Lion, which is the company that created the platform for UFC Fight Pass as well as different NBA, NFL platforms. So they now own that, which is interesting. I don't know. People are asking how that's going to affect the UFC. I don't know if it will how it affects the TV deal. I don't think it does.
Will they add other things to the Fight Pass?
Who knows?
Who knows, right?
Basically what happens is they bought a platform.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they were going to lose any money from not owning the platform behind UFC Fight Pass. I'm sure all the revenue that comes to Fight Pass, none of it goes to New Lion. New Lion just got paid to design it and get paid for the upkeep.
And I know Marshall, the Glory CEO, was the big part of starting UFC Fight Pass.
Mm-hmm. So New Lion's a big company, and Endeavor just bought it, I think it was for $250 million. So that was interesting to see.
Yeah, who knows what'll
happen. The product, but
yeah, we'll see what happens with it.
Joshua, I mean, Zuffa Boxing, now you've got a whole... I think that Zuffa Boxing, you know, while a lot of people think it's kind of Dana's baby, if it's under the WME, or I guess the Endeavor umbrella, now you've got a whole other product that you can either add to the UFC's TV negotiating rights or create a whole new market.
Yeah, that the offer was pretty insane. $500 million.
Yeah, $500 million. You're not throwing that kind of money at somebody, so that you are going to lose money.
But it's a tough call. Was there like a term attached to it?
Yeah, I think it was like eight fights.
Eight fights,
if I recall. But I think that also, like, they basically Joshua probably does
two fights a year.
Yeah, heavyweight fights. Yeah, two a year. So you got them for 4 years or whatever. But I also think that there would probably be a clause that they would get matching rights for afterwards and all that. Like, because boxing, you don't see a lot of guys jump from boxing promoter to boxing promoter. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be tough. I'm sure all the people who built him up, you know, don't want that deal.
Yeah.
He's a superstar. Like, it's crazy to see what he does in the UK. We haven't seen anything like that. I don't think anyone in the UFC could even do that, right? Like, he's literally...
Darren Till, maybe, in a couple months, but who knows?
Well, I mean, I want to say Anthony Joshua's... what was his last fight? They sold out the whole...
Yeah. Was it 65,000
versus Wales or something? 65.
Oh, no, it was in Liverpool.
Yeah, it was like 65,000 people. It was crazy. Like, his walkout was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He went on this platform, and then all of a sudden, this platform that has these huge AJ letter on it started rising up, and then fireworks. I've never seen a walkout like that.
Yeah.
Probably the most intense thing I've ever seen. Unreal. So, I mean, the money and the popularity behind Joshua right now is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just intense. And if he goes in and he beats Parker and then he gets that fight with Wilder, that's going to be one of the biggest fights we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, man, boxing's doing well. Yeah, I mean,
Zuffa Boxing would have to negotiate with Wilder and his people, but if you get that fight together,
I think that's gonna be the biggest
heavyweight fight in years.
If you offer a lot of these, you know, boxers who, you know, aren't going to make those high pay-per-views, like a lot of them, if you give them a little bit of a, you know, a takedown defense, or we'll get some crazy boxers. And I'm trying to think... is it Gervonta Davis?
Gervonta Davis. He keeps saying he wants to come in.
Yeah.
This is a guy who missed weight at Mayweather versus McGregor and lost his belt on the scale.
Yeah. But hey, we let, you know, CM Punk in. Like, what does that mean to get a real good boxer like that? What could a high-level boxer do in the UFC?
Well, we saw James Toney, but
out of shape, out of his prime.
We also saw Holly Holm on the flip side.
Yeah,
right?
But I would like to see a high-level boxer in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be awesome to see. You know,
we're better than at heavyweight, right?
Yeah, like a good, like, you know, active boxer now would be amazing to see now. Like, you got to think someone like, what could, hypothetical, but what can someone like a Lomachenko do with a 4-ounce MMA glove? You know, what would Triple G do against someone? You know, just, it's fun matchups like that. But I think like a high-level boxer like that with a 4-ounce glove.
I think they would just get taken down or kicked.
But I mean, you trained them for a year of takedown defense, right?
A year? I don't know, man.
Well, but strategic
depends on who you're putting them against. Yeah,
strategic matchups. Like, I mean, old school MMA was like kickboxers used to go in MMA fights with no experience.
Yeah, but we're comparing apples to oranges here.
Yeah, but still, a little takedown defense. I'm telling you right now, if with me, I would take an MMA fight, no problem. If you gave me like if I wrestled with someone for 6 months and then you gave me a striker in the UFC, I would jump on that, no problem.
And it would have to be a striker, right? It would have to be like a Stephen Thompson or like a, you know.
Or someone with half, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still confident. Like, to me, this, like, even if the guy was a black belt, I'm starting on the feet. Like, to me, it doesn't matter. You take me down, you take me down.
You've knocked out a sheriff black belt before.
Well, yeah, if you hit, like, you start on the feet. I have a few minutes to try, a few seconds to try to hit you if I can. But again, that's me. And I'm sure a lot of these boxers have that same mentality. So
I think Demian Maia would eat you for lunch, though.
Maybe. We'll see.
He'd take one shot, get in, and you'd be in big trouble.
But could he take the one shot? That's the problem.
That's
right?
The question. That's the big question.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll take the shot. No. He'd be so scared of my low kick, I'd give him a good straight and put Damian Maia right out. You can never ask me.
Yeah, this is, it's an unfair question for me to ask.
Everybody asks that. Like, I always go, "What do you think if you fought?" It's like, I'll beat anyone. You can't ask me who I'm gonna lose or not. I wouldn't have been a world champion if I ever thought I was gonna lose.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. You can't. Your mentality won't change overnight.
You, people ask me seriously in my head. They're like, you know, oh, who's gonna challenge
but
Rico?
You,
there was no.
You would
one.
Lose to you'd lose to Maya in a strictly jiu-jitsu match.
Maybe, you know, give me some training.
You need decades of training. Yeah, he'd need to be like 60.
That's a little different. But if there's some sort of striking, like if that the Eddie Bravo and you let me strike a little bit, I don't know. Give me some open palm strikes. I'll take it.
Yeah. I think that you could probably beat me in anything. Not just sports, but anything. If you were like, if you put your mind to it in the same way that you approached whatever you approach your daily life, really,
that's a lot of discipline. That's one of Rogan's big points, right? Yeah. That's one of Rogan's big points. Like, and that's the way I kind of approach my life too. And when people ask me, like with doctors and stuff like that, like I go into doctors, just my mentality. Like, is the doctor the smarter person? I mean, no, he just decided to put his energy and his focus and you know 8 years of studying there. My 8 years of studying happened in a ring.
See, I don't have
that
mentality.
No, but you do, though. I think
No, I don't think so. I would never go into a doctor's office and be like, I could do what that guy's doing. Never.
You could. Why not?
I was bad at science. I wasn't interested in it.
But you can learn. You're really good at learning. You're very intelligent.
I'm just not interested in it. I have no interest in learning
about it. But you could if you wanted to. No?
If I went to lectures, no, my brain wouldn't let me focus on it.
It wouldn't let you do it?
No, my brain's just not wired that way. Like, I wouldn't be able to sit down and learn what I need to learn in order to be a doctor.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't classify myself as a school person. Like, I wouldn't say I'm naturally gifted, you know, academically, but
I
could work hard. Like you said, I would work hard to do it.
Like, if somebody showed me how to do what the doctors do, and I just had to learn it from like a hands-on practical standpoint, I'm sure I could do like a checkup for somebody and not miss a beat.
Yeah. Yeah. Checkup. Like, you got to think of your family doctor.
Yeah.
They just read a book of a whole bunch of random stuff, and then if they don't know,
it takes like 15 years to get that like a PhD.
Yeah, but you can do it. It's just time. I don't know. I would never say like lawyers, doctors. I could have done the same thing if I would have just, like you said, put that mindset to it. I could have done it. You could have done it.
Yeah, I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
I think you could. You're not giving yourself enough credit here.
Yeah,
right?
I probably should give myself more credit, but I don't know. One last thing I wanted to point out, Volkan Uzdemir versus Shogun Hua has booked. I think that's also on the Chile card, if I'm not mistaken, UFC Chile. Gustafsson says he only wants to fight for an interim light heavyweight title belt. Is pretty much Gustafsson now out of options. I mean, the only other option I could think of for him to fight is Rockhold. And
yeah, you put that in your notes as well.
But if you put Rockhold in a light heavyweight fight for an interim belt, like, he's jumping the entire line. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that would be coming off a loss that you could do that. So I think Gustafsson has basically talked himself out of any fight because he's not going to fight Aleir Latifi, who he trains with. He's not going to fight Manoa, who isn't really in line anyways. You've got Ozdemir and Hua are booked. There's really nobody in line for a title fight that Gustafsson could fight. Maybe Jan Blachowicz, another a rematch against him, but that first fight was kind of boring, and Blachowicz Blachowicz ranked third now, but I don't think you could put an interim title on for Blachowicz either.
Yeah, no, I don't. This light heavyweight division, man, it's really weak.
Tumbleweeds right now.
Yeah, especially with DC now being out. Then again, another interim title probably on the line.
I did see a rumor that Misha Cirkunov is going to be fighting Tyson Pedro next, which that's an interesting fight because Pedro, I think, is one of the big up-and-comers at light heavyweight. So that's an interesting test for Misha if that gets signed. But just a rumor I heard.
That sounds like a good fight to me.
Yeah, for sure. Before we get to our guest, we got Sarah Morris on the show today. We are going to talk about we've been doing picks for all the different cards. And because we have a three-week lull here, I guess 2 weeks with no events, what we're going to do, because there's two titles on the line for UFC 223, we're going to make two picks. Have you looked at the odds yet, or should we?
It doesn't matter. I can go with it.
You're going to go with it? Okay, we're going to make our first pick this week and our next pick next week. I'm going to let you go first, Joe.
This is our 223 bet, eh?
223. Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, go. Okay. Give me a couple of seconds.
All right. I'm going to go with Tony Ferguson at +210. I think we discussed this kind of last week. I mean, and it's a risky pick. Don't get me wrong. But I just think Ferguson has far more ways to win that fight than Khabib does. If you ask me who's the better fighter, that's a tough question. I don't know how to answer that. But styles make fights. Matchups make fights. And I just think Ferguson is a nightmare matchup for Khabib. So I think that at a +210 number, Like, I can't pass Ferguson can't up pass against another man on the planet of that size.
Huh. Well, I don't really like the underdogs, any of the underdogs, really, but actually, you know what? Here it is. I know my pick. I'm going with Paul Felder. Plus
right.
100.
Yeah, he's an underdog, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was the favorite.
He's a small
I misread
underdog,
it.
Yeah.
But a small underdog, I like Paul Felder.
All right. The Irish Dragon.
I do like Paul Felder. Very intelligent. Always, you know, comes out and does well. And he finishes, good finish rate, good commentator.
I mean, let's
Paul
be honest,
Felder.
He's fighting a realtor. So, I mean, he should have no problem fighting. Oh, I can't. He's just a realtor, right?
Yeah.
That's what he does on the side.
That's what he does. Yeah.
There's a great Twitter account called, I think it's Iaquinta Realty. Yeah. It's like a parody account of, like, it's like the real estate side of
Iaquinta.
Yeah,
yeah,
and all of the jokes are about selling houses and stuff like that. So it's a very clever account. Follow Iaquinta Realty on Twitter. All right, so let's get to our next guest. She is a women's bantamweight fighter, Canadian from the West Coast, who I think is a very, very crafty mixed martial artist. Unfortunately, coming off of a loss, she lost to Lucy Pudilova last month. And but I'm always interested in speaking with her because she's got a lot of passion. That's Sarah Cheesecake Morris, and she joins us now on the TSN MMA show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
I'm pleased to be joined now by Canadian mixed martial artist in the women's bantamweight division, Sarah Morris. She recently, unfortunately, had a loss against Lucy Pudilova in a very fun competitive fight back in February. It's good to have you on the show, Sarah. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm great. You know, we last spoke in Edmonton after your win against Ashley Evans-Smith. You had told me you were working at the post office and, you know, we're looking to get some more fights. What's going on in your life right now? How's everything?
You know, things are kind of all right. They're a little sucky, I guess. I broke my foot in that fight, so I'm just trying to recover and trying to heal right now before I can think about fighting again. But all I want to do is fight.
What's your recovery time like for something like that?
They said that I'm healing faster than expected, but I don't know. Doctors are kind of off, so he said 4 to 6 months, but I'm hoping my follow-up will be healed and I'll be ready to get back at her. But I guess we'll just see how it goes.
You had taken more than 2 years off after your fight with Jessica Andrade before your win over Ashley Evans-Smith. What had gone on during those 2 years?
I had back-to-back injuries. I was injured going into that fight, so I was a little banged up after that fight as well. And then I just had injury after injury, just preventing me from fighting. So that, and then I had a fight lined up against Laura Murphy, but I got injured in that fight camp. So it wasn't like I wasn't training at all. I was training and I was wanting to fight, but it just didn't happen for me. So I'm hoping that this won't keep me out for too long and I'll be able to get back in there, hopefully by the summer.
Are you still planning on fighting at bantamweight? Is that where your home is going to be going forward?
You know, I think bantamweight's small for me. It's a stressful weight cut for me. I'm hoping to move up a weight class, but I'm really hoping that I can, like, stay in shape and just not wait so long between fights. And I'm hoping that I can fight between bantamweight and featherweight. I'd like to fight at both weight classes if I'm able to, but I'll just see how it all goes.
Yeah, that's kind of rare because nobody really talks about moving up to featherweight, unless it's, of course, it's the fight Cyborg, because there aren't really any rankings at 145. Do you think the UFC should perhaps do an Ultimate Fighter season or something to build up that division a little bit more?
It would be awesome if they did something like that. It would be awesome to build that weight class. They need to be doing something. Cyborg keeps fighting 135ers that are moving up. It would be nice if we had a 145 division and they were able to build that division for her, just like they did with Ronda and everyone else. Like, yeah, it's a shame that they're not putting more effort into it, but I'm hoping if I can get a fight at 45, maybe they'll sign someone new and we'll be able to build that division.
Have you made that clear to the UFC that you're interested in fighting in that weight class?
Normally, I'm not the one that contacts them, but I am going to be just as soon as I'm healthy again and just let them know that I'm interested in 45 as well as 35.
So are you still working at the post office at Canada Post?
I am not right now. Like, I'm not supposed to be driving right now, so it makes it pretty difficult. And then I haven't been able to commit to the amount of shifts that they need, so they let me go.
Oh, I'm sure you hear that.
Yeah.
So what are you doing to occupy your time now? Just training as much as you can? Or, I mean, I guess if you're not able to drive, it's your right foot that's broken?
Yeah, it's my right foot, although I do drive standard, so it makes it difficult.
Yes, yes, that would make it difficult.
Yeah.
Do they have some sort of thing that if you can't use your right foot, you can drive an automatic vehicle using your left foot? Is there like because they have the pedal very far to the right hand side?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been being careful and I've been driving a little bit with it. It's feeling a lot better than I was expecting it to, and better than the doctor was expecting it to. So I took a while off driving, but in the last week or so, I've been back at it.
Well,
so it's doing better than I thought.
I felt for you after these last two fights, because I felt that the fight with Ashley Evans-Smith should have earned you a performance of the night bonus. It was a great submission. You know, you showed your versatility on the ground. And then, of course, your last fight with Lucy Pudilova, I thought, had warranted a fight of the night bonus. I thought that was just an unbelievable fight. But on both of those counts, you unfortunately weren't able to earn a performance bonus. How much would a performance bonus have meant to you in both of those situations?
Oh, man. Like, it would have really helped out a lot. Like, especially this last one, not just because I lost, but because I fought in Texas, they take off U.S. taxes, whereas the Edmonton one was only Canadian taxes that I have to pay. So this one I make even less money than the less money that I make. So it's making things a little tighter, especially since I have a broken foot and I'm not able to work and I'm not able to train and I'm not able to fight as quickly as I'd like to fight. So, but I'm trying to budget and I'm just going through it all right now. I just went to my tax lady today and figured things out a bit more. So it's, yeah, things will work out. They always do.
And finally, before I let you go, what do you think of the state of Canadian mixed martial arts right now? Who do you think from Canada could emerge as a future contender, future champion? I know Alexis Davis has climbed up the ranks at flyweight to new division, and she looks very good in her fight against Liz Carmouche. Is there anybody that stands out to you, or anybody we should keep our eye out for that's out in BC with you?
You know, I'm training with a lady named Maria. She's really awesome. She's just trying to get her first fight booked right now. She's had multiple fights booked and they've all fallen through within a month or a week or, you know, a few days of a fight. So she's been training hard, and she's been training hard for a while, and she's someone to watch out for. So I've been working with her. I worked with her for this last camp and she really helped me with my striking game. And yeah, she's definitely one to watch out for. So she's hoping to get a fight at the end of next month, and also possibly in June. So,
is it hard to find good training partners out in BC?
It's surprisingly difficult. I think all of Canada is a bit hard. So, yeah. So I'm thinking of maybe going elsewhere for a bit and training with more people in the U.S. and just getting more female training partners to work with, because here there's not so much.
How far is it for you to drive? I don't know how far Kelowna is from Washington State to train perhaps with like a Matt Hume or something along those lines.
So Seattle's probably about a 6-hour drive, I think. So it's not too bad.
Would that be something that would interest you if you were to reach out to Matt and train out there for a little bit?
Possibly. I'd like to train as many places as I can, but right now I'm eyeing up Las Vegas. With the Performance Institute there and so many gyms and so many fighters going through Vegas, I think it would be a great place to train and work with other people.
Well, hopefully your recovery, again, like you mentioned, it's on track to get you going a little bit sooner rather than later, and that's great news. It's always fun watching your fights, and especially the last two were both very, very exciting fights. So we're looking forward to seeing you in the octagon again, especially from a Canadian perspective. And best of luck with everything. Hopefully we get to see you before the end of the year again.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
That was Sarah Morris. You know, I was disappointed she didn't get the performance bonus in that fight against Lucy Pudilova, as I told her. But I think that she's got a very bright future in the bantamweight division, women's bantamweight division, just because there's, you know, she's got a really interesting skill set. With all of her different submissions or groundwork, and that division's thinning out a little bit because a lot of them are going down to flyweight. So That was a fun conversation. One thing we wanted to touch on before we go, Joe Rogan recently said on his podcast, he thinks the UFC should get rid of win bonuses. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with Rogan on that. I think they rely too heavily on a win bonus rather than, I feel it should be a performance bonus rather than a win-or-lose bonus. Like, if you go in there and you're leaving it all out there and you know, you have these fight of the nights or, you know, or close to fight of the nights, because if you get a fight of the night, it's 50 Gs, right? But if you go out there and you leave it out there, you're split open, your eyes are swollen, you put on a good performance, you deserve that bonus, in my opinion. And I think it's too heavily. It's not like maybe an incentive, a win incentive instead of a win bonus, but the UFC is doubles the show and wins. So, I mean, it's a lot of money for guys, and it's not really encouraging for fighters. If you want to play safe because of that win bonus, you're losing that excitement factor in sports. But if you know that you leave it out there and it's an exciting fight, you're still going to get your money. You're going to be more encouraged to want to put on more exciting fights.
But then what do you do? Because let's say you and I are fighting hypothetically. I'm making $50,000. You're making $15,000. If I win, I get an extra $50,000. If you win, you get an extra $15,000. What do you do with that money? Like, how does the UFC disseminate that money? Obviously, the contracts are in. You know, the contracts are the contracts. Now you can't rip them up and just say, "Well, you're going to get your win bonus regardless," or "We're going to take the win bonus and split it evenly between the two fighters." What do you do? Are you talking about a performance bonus for every fight? Like, if you get a finish, you get a bonus?
No, more of like how you perform, I would say. I mean, you could really tell who leaves it out there and who doesn't. But
they have that already at the end of the card.
It's hard because now it's, pardon me?
Like, they have that at the end of the card already. Like, they have the performance bonuses.
No, I mean, each fighter, instead of a win bonus, I'm saying, so you get your show bonus. And instead of the win bonus being, you know, say you're 50 and 50, 50 to show, 50 to win, maybe put 25 of it as a performance bonus. If you go out there and you leave it all out there and you felt like, or whoever the UFC feels like you did well, you get that 25K, and then maybe 25K to win after that. Instead of making that whole big pot, split it up in different ways. You got to think, if you go out there and you put on an amazing performance and you're making 50 and 50, like, and you don't win, that's half of your purse. That's a lot of money. So what am I going to do? I'm going to play it the safest way possible. I'm going to hold you. I'm going to lay on you. I'm going to not make it exciting. So it's going to kind of slow guys down from wanting to take bigger risks.
Yeah, but don't you think a lot of guys, like, let's say you have a wrestling background and you're going to win by grappling. Like Khabib, for example. Khabib's a fantastic fighter, but let's say he beats Ferguson by wrestling him for five rounds, taking him down and beating him up on the ground. Should that count for less? Like, if he has a pretty dominant performance, but it's not super interesting.
I think it's performance still. Like, how did he do? Like, he dominated. He used what he was good at and dominated. So performance-wise, he did well. If you come in and all of a sudden now you came out out of shape, you're gassing in the second round, you know, you're not really putting on any form of entertainment for the crowd, and, you know, and you win, well, I don't think necessarily you should get your full bonus either. Maybe, like I said, maybe make it in quarters or something like that.
Let's say I'm making 50 and 50 and I win my fight. What if they said, you're going to get your 50. If you win, like, your bonus is now going to be either 50% or 150%. So you're going to make 25,000 if you win by a decision that's not unanimous, or you're going to win an additional 25% if you win by finish or by unanimous decision.
But I don't mind that, but the criticism there goes to bad judging and reffing now, right? So
right,
we've had
like,
some terrible judging
now,
right? Now we're relying on another factor, mm-hmm. you know, rather than
that's
yourself.
Tough. That's why I think this whole idea is tough, because you're bringing intangibles in. Like, a win is a win. You're going to win. Yeah. You win the fight. And if you win the fight, that goes on your record as a win, and you get that bonus. As long as you make weight and all that stuff. But, like, in order to do it on performances, you're bringing something subjective into the fray. That's the tough part
about it. It's tough. But, I mean, it's better than relying on the judges, I would think. And, I mean, if you win and it's crappy and you didn't really do anything and you, I don't know, do you really deserve your full win bonus? Or, that's what I'm saying. If you can do 50 to show, 25 win bonus, and 25,000 as a performance bonus.
But then you're going from making more money to making less money despite winning, right? Like, it would be harder for fighters to sign a contract to be like, listen, I want to.
You win and you perform well, you get your full $100,000. If say,
yeah, but as opposed to now, if you win regardless, you get $100,000.
Yeah,
so you almost have to incentivize it.
Yeah, I don't know. True.
You'd have to add like an additional,
or add like a knockout bonus or something. Like, hey, if you knock out your opponent, here's an extra $10K, or like you said, more of knockout based rather than maybe decision based.
But the other problem with that is you're now bringing liability into the fray, because let's say the UFC is ever faced with a lawsuit down the line, the people that are launching the lawsuit can be like, we were encouraged to inflict a certain degree of damage on, like, seriously, liability works.
But that's what the sport is.
It is, right? but that's why they used to call it knockout of the night bonus and submission of the night bonus. They changed the name of it to performance of the night bonus because of liability.
Yeah.
Because if someone comes out and says, well, we were encouraged to knock each other out to harm each other's brains.
But that's what the sport is.
But I'm just talking from a legal standpoint.
From a legal standpoint.
That's why they changed the name to performance of the night bonus.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. That's why it didn't used to be called that. It used to be called knockout of the night and submission of the night.
So then we shouldn't really call it fighting.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, but that's the sport. The sport, I guess, is fighting. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. It's all legalities. I think that's why they changed it.
Even when I was coming through the ranks, I try not to say fight.
Yeah.
I try not to
use
that word.
I call them athletes now. I won't call them fighters anymore.
I would say
UFC athletes.
As a athlete, this is how I don't say as a fighter because I'm not a fighter. I'm an athlete and martial artist, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So if we start changing the language, it's going to sound better. And I mean, one of the biggest things for me and the problems was the stereotypes around the word fighter. You know, people expect tattoos and the Chuck Liddell mohawks, and I don't have any of those things that people stereotype with fighting. So when
people
ask me,
sees you on the street, they're not going to be like, that guy must be a fighter.
No, I wouldn't want that, right? Tattoos. I wouldn't want to be labeled in that way, right? So that's not my look. So when I first started, would say as an athlete, as a martial artist, I would never say, hey, I would not fight. I would use the word bout. You know, or I have a competition coming up. I don't like to use those words. I try to stay away from them, but sometimes it's the name of the sport, and that's what we call it.
I try to do that in all my articles as
well. We try to do it. Yeah.
Do you have any tattoos?
No.
You might be like the rare person in combat sport that has no tattoos.
Yeah, and I got no facial hair. So no facial hair and no tattoos. Yeah. So I look like the baby still.
I got to look and see if there's anybody else like that, because I don't know if there is. I look at every UFC fight, and I'm always trying to look for people with no
tattoos.
Without tattoos.
I don't know. Now, yeah, I'm probably more of a minority.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I'm not probably. Yeah. Absolutely.
They all have it. Yeah, I'm going to start
at
looking
least one
more
tattoo.
Into it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
We should look. I should go through the entire UFC roster and see how many people have tattoos.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
I'm going to look. Maybe I'll go through it.
Do you have a tattoo?
Fight by fight. No.
No?
No. It's against my religion, apparently. Jewish people are not supposed to get tattoos. They cut them off of you before they bury you if you get tattoos.
Doesn't sound pleasant.
In a Jewish cemetery. Well, you're dead, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
You don't feel it much.
Yeah.
All right, so next week we'll have a full UFC 223 preview. That's two championships on the line, of course. Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas. She's trying to get her title back from Rose after that first-round knockout victory from Rose Namajunas. Tony Ferguson defending his interim title belt, which will then become the official title belt bout afterwards. Very confusing. Against Khabib Nurmagomedov in the main event. Check out tsn.ca/UFC for all the latest news and notes. And also next week, full coverage of UFC 223. And then check out Joseph Valtellini on YouTube. His latest videos are great instructional videos for you to learn.
Yeah.
Everything you need to learn. And if you want to learn how to beat Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, if you're Darren
Till,
that
video is still out
there. Yeah.
And I just put out, I think this video that came out this week, how to fight a taller opponent. The week before was fighting a shorter pressure fighter with power. So different situations, always learning. Keep learning, keep subscribing, share with your friends.
And if you want to learn from Joe himself, Bazooka Kickboxing in Scarborough, Ontario.
Yeah, 680 Progress Avenue. Nice plug, Aaron. Thank you.
Absolutely. Get some Nando's chicken with Joe after the fact as well.
I
missed out on the free Nando's this weekend. Oh, well.
Nando's?
Yeah, they had free Nando's. If you bought like a non-perishable food item,
really?
You got free Nando's from like 11 to 1 on Sunday.
Okay.
I missed out on it. Oh, well. That's life. We'll be back next week. UFC 223 full preview.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.